right now, I have Bruce Rawls here, and we're ready for the House of the Rising Sun, and the sun is rising here, so it's perfect timing. And good morning, Bruce. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Lynn and all. I'm great. Hope all of you are the same.
So far, so good.
All right.
For me, anyway. So Bruce, what do you got in mind for us today?
I put the link in the Skype window. Maybe you could put that in the chat room.
Okay.
As a suggestion, of course, you know, obviously just about anything is fair game. But I ran across this in searching for a quote to to add to a Facebook post this morning. And I just realized, wow, this is actually a part 9 at least of a multi-part series that I hadn't read before, so I'm gonna have to go back and read the previous parts, but this already looks good. So maybe, I mean, Ken's work, like the course itself, is so interwoven and self-consistent in terms of the underlying content. I thought, well, we could jump in part 9 and certainly get plenty out of it.
Paste the link, because I didn't get it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I think it might be because I pasted it in the previous Skype conversation. That's probably why.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
I see. There we go.
There we go. Okay. So there's the link.
Dream. I like that.
The dreamer of the dream. And it's part of the Happy Dream.
Right.
A seminar held at FACIM in Temecula. Foundation for A Course in Miracles in Temecula. And you can find this on the FACIM.org website, which has a wealth of wonderful material, including a lot of Ken's essays, as well as the YouTube videos, links to the YouTube channel, and to the Lighthouse articles, which are wonderful, and the Q&A service, which Lynn and I have mostly been reading from for quite a while on these Saturday morning conversations. And this one is entitled Happy Dream, excerpts from the seminar held at the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, Temecula, California, Kenneth Wapnick, PhD. And this is part 9, The Dreamer of the Dream, continued. So does this seem good to you?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. Well, like I said, I just did a Google search for a quote, and I'll remember when we run across it. But do you have that up and ready to read?
I do. I have it up and ready to read.
Okay. Do you want to start in with reading the first paragraph or so?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Okay.
Let me do something real quick here.
Okay.
What I always do is go in and under my settings, I don't know if people know you can do this. You can go in under your settings on your internet, whatever you're in. I'm in Chrome. And I can actually make it 150% bigger than it is on the screen. So
I can see
it well. And the
Zoom.
Other thing, before we ever get going here, there's a difference between, there's two websites that you can go to. One is FASM, which is the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, mm-hmm. where all this stuff is. And the other one is the FIP, Foundation for Inner Peace website, which
exactly.
has all the publications.
Uh-huh.
And so you can go to the Foundation for Inner Peace and there's a lot of stuff there too as well. But this is where the FASM is where you get like these articles and YouTube videos and all that kind of stuff. So, just so people know, there's a lot of resources that, you know, maybe people don't even recognize or know is there.
Exactly.
So go ahead.
I was just going to compliment what you just said. Those two websites, which if you just remember FACIM.org and then subtract the F to go to ACIM.org, those are the two main websites for A Course in Miracles. And in terms of, you know, the official sites, basically, and they both have incredible amount of depth and breadth of material. You know, even though the primary site has been historically, as far as the teaching end of it, the FACIM, the folks in Temecula, the landscape is changing, and there may be other material that complements what the folks in Temecula are doing. which is wonderful and highly recommended, that will be added very soon to the other site. And I happen to be an active participant in the process. I do, actually. So we're working vigorously and very actively bringing a new website to and replace the current one, which will have vastly enhanced capabilities. But we'll go into that more later when it's live and, you know, more to talk about. But anyway, lots of fun things happening under the hood there, and it'll soon surface. So
Very cool. Thank you so much for that work. I appreciate that you're doing it. And, you know, why I think for me personally, and I know there's a lot of other teachers out there, and there's a lot of other materials out there, and there are a lot of websites out there that are about A Course in Miracles. This foundation, though, is really, you know, these are the people who, from the very beginning of A Course in Miracles, have given their lives, really, to ensuring that this work is kept consistent and that it's available in a really helpful way, and really keeping the spirit of the course with the original vision of Bill and Helen and Jesus, which, you know, that's no small thing. So I do appreciate any work that goes to keeping these foundations in place.
Absolutely.
And, keeping the message pure, because, you know, I'm not going to go into a big diatribe of this, but I am going to say that, you know, when we use all sorts of, you know, everybody has their different version, and this is what I prefer, understanding that these preferences are the ego's preferences. They're not the Holy Spirit's preferences for what's better. And the Holy Spirit has no preference whatsoever for any of them. So no matter what you think, you know, I have a preference for this. That's really my ego that has a preference for this. It's not the Holy Spirit or Jesus who says, you know, do it this or that way. It is my ego that has this, desire to, you know, be right. So not saying anything about anybody else's motives, just saying about my own. I know myself, and I know what lengths I will go to make another person wrong. Being the ego.
Right. Yeah, that's a great reminder. Because it's just a reminder to remember the content in the mind and not the form. As you were saying that, an example came to mind is a few days ago, a friend of mine who's a course student sent me a video, and he has the words "A Course in Miracles" in it, but I listened to the basically a monologue that he put up on YouTube, and you know, it was interesting, but it really didn't have much to do with the course. So this is just a factual statement in terms of having read the course, you know, more than a few times, and it's like there really wasn't much in there about the course. So, you know, the things that are labeled in a way that represents something that may or may not be, you know, factual kind of thing. So in addition to supporting the two sister organizations, FACIM and ACIM.org, the two websites, I think it's, like you say, Lynn, it's a great reminder that the form is ultimately irrelevant, and yet we need the form to get us back to the content of the mind. And so watching the contents of our mind and seeing where we would want to judge or discriminate in a way that makes wrong or makes the separation real, that's hugely important and a major part of our classroom. So for those of us who have, you know, worked, you know, in terms of vocation or avocation with the course in different capacities, it's particularly important to not get into the trap of thinking that the form is where the content is.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that takes a lot of forms.
That's right. And I used to think that because it seems to me like there's a couple of big, like, major splits in the course community. And there's one group who tends to believe that the world is real, and that, you know, when we get into this happy dream, that we'll see the reality of the world and how it is perfect, which I'm sure we will see something other than what we normally have seen in the world. But then the others who believe that the world is not real, that it is an illusion, and that, you know, none of these things that we see here will be permanent or be here forever. And, you know, when you ask them, well, the ones who say, I think the world is real, well, why do you think that? And then they go back directly into the course and see everywhere where Jesus said, this world, this world, this world, this world. And, you know, it seems pretty compelling if you have that state of mind that he really is talking about, you know, this little planet Earth and, you know, the galaxies and whatever. So even with one version of the course, you have people who argue about the meaning of it. So when you start adding in all these other versions of the course and put in all these other multiple potential meanings, then you just really have, you know, people will argue over anything.
A Tower of Babel?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
One of my favorite skits, which I know I've mentioned more than a few times, is in the Life of Brian movie that Monty Python troupe did. There's a scene where they're in this Colosseum, basically, and they're watching the usual Roman spectacle, and the camera's turned on the people way up in the bleachers, you know, basically, you know, the group of that Brian, who's his supposedly Jesus' contemporary, you know, in Judea, you know, he's a vendor in the bleachers, and he discovers the People's Front of Judea, and then he discovers this one other guy who something like, you know, the Judean People's Front, you know, says, and then they all shout at him, you know, splitter, you know, kind of thing. But, you know, it's yes. But that's. And I think that's such a wonderful, brilliant metaphor of how we take the form of, you know, you putting, you know, the word Judea at the front of the name of your group rather than at the end, you know. It's like, well, it's the same idea, you know, but we get so enamored and so fixated on the form that we forget that we're all here for the same purpose, which is waking up. And I think the way that we help each other and are truly helpful, as the Course suggests, is to look but without condemnation. And I think if we can just look, and, you know, the photons entering our eyes are going to be the same photons. The acoustical waves that enter our eardrums are going to be the same acoustical waves. But we will, as recognizing, you know, the illusory nature and the purpose of aspect of it, see it differently. We have a different interpretation because we drop the ego's interpretation and take up the metaphoric hand of our inner kindness teacher, and then that translation, which doesn't have the same filter and the same, you know, distortion that the ego does, doesn't see anything in the world as being suggestive of the idea that our innocence has been compromised. Anyone's interest, innocence has been compromised. And so to look without condemnation, I think, is hugely important. And I think sometimes we forget that when we get caught up in the form. So anyway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the minute we start even comparing.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's condemnation. You know, it's so simple. And yet it seems, you know, because people will say, and I've heard people say that here over and over again, you know, that, you know, when I see the world without judging my brother or without judging another person, then I'll see the real world. And in reality, is when you see the world without any sort of opinion whatsoever, when I see a table without looking at it and saying, I know what that is, it's a table. That's when I see the real world, is when I am not looking at things and saying, I know what it is. That's the judgment that Jesus is talking about. Not the judgment that, you know, it's a bad table or it's a wrong colored table, it's a judgment that it is a table. Here's something that proves that God and I are separate.
Mm-hmm.
God and his creation are separate. It's a table. I can see it. I can touch it. I can knock it with my hand.
That separation is real, right?
That means separation is real. Mm-hmm. So to see the world without judgment, without condemnation, is really to see it with like a newborn baby's eyes. Like, I'm seeing things I don't know what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why all of these lessons are about, I do not know, I do not know, I do not know, to remind us that we just really seriously do not know. And as hard as that may be.
I think this actually fits in perfectly, just this first paragraph, you know, just jumps right into that, you know, not knowing. And just like he says, resigning is your own teacher, and to deny the denial of truth are the two quotes that he likes to put together. Do you want to read that, or shall I?
Go ahead and start reading, yeah.
Okay.
So this is part 9 of The Dreamer of the Dream from the FASM Outreach. And so back to The Dreamer of the Dream, paragraph 14, the section. And that's rest in the Holy Spirit and allow his gentle dreams, quote, in brackets, the happy dreams, to take the place of those you dreamed in terror and in fear of death. So how do we rest in the Holy Spirit? We rest in the Holy Spirit by firing the ego, because it is the one or the other. Because it is one or the other. And that's the ego, one or the other, either this or that. We do not choose the Holy Spirit until we first fire the ego. There are two lines in the text that I always like to bring together, even though they occur several hundred pages apart. Resign now as your own teacher, for you have been badly taught. And that's from text chapter 7, chapter 12. We first have to resign as our own teacher, recognizing we have taught ourselves badly, before we can accept Jesus as our teacher. In this course, the way we say yes to the Holy Spirit is to say no to the ego. To say yes is to say not no. Okay, to say yes is to say not no. Our task, Jesus tells us, is to deny the denial of truth. He does not say our task is to affirm truth. And so, yeah, that's just what I was just saying as well, that mm-hmm. The we have to first stop believing the lie,
right,
before we can start believing the truth. And it's so hard to stop believing the lie because we have so much investment. I mean, it's what I've been taught my whole life. You know, it's every experience I've ever had has been that, you know, everything here is real and solid, and there's no reason to doubt that at all. And you know, Jesus is telling me that to accept this world as it appears before my eyes or in my vision as a real solid thing is to accept an illusion and to reject the truth. And so, like I said, it's hard to reject the illusion because it appears so real and so so constant and so, you know, and then until you start seeing the little flickering, until you start seeing the glitches in the matrix, which you have seen and I have seen, and I think everyone has seen, that this couldn't possibly be true. And when you start even seeing that, then to reinforce that in your mind by remembering it, not letting the ego brush it off like it never happened. Like, oh no, I didn't see that. No, that's not true. And it happens so frequently that, you know, once you start stopping and looking and noticing, oh, how could I have ever thought that was real? Then you've just got to give it a chance is all I'm saying. Anyway, I'll stop talking and, let you carry on.
Okay. Well, I like everything you said. And, you know, give peace a chance, basically, is what, you know. And the way we do that, as you were saying, I was thinking about, you know, another, you know, aspect of what Ken talks about a lot is the not know is, you know, denying the denial of truth is really the truth doesn't need an affirmation, you know. So to affirm truth, really the best way is to just stop denying it, which, you know, takes in one form or another the willingness for us to, like you say, Lynn, you know, not to get and, you know, to look at our investment in the illusion, and you know, metaphorically we notice that we are in the anti-truth campaign headquarters and then just say, oh, this isn't working, and then walk out of that building, and you know, then suddenly we're in truth headquarters, because that's everything else, you know. It's just, and that's the only dark you know, building on the block, you know, and in the cosmos. But we think that we need to somehow affirm the truth sometimes, is that, you know, to lay flowers at the altar of truth. Well, the truth is already as fragrant as we can, you know, beyond what we can imagine. So it probably doesn't need us to, you know, to bring it flowers. But at the same time, you know, we I think the other aspect of that comes to mind is, again, as you were saying, that I think we forget easily, is that we're invested in that identity because it means that we need to let go of wanting to be right. And I think what one of the I think most brilliant things I've heard, of which there are many, that Ken expound on, is that the Eastern mystical tradition gave us you know, in numerous ways, the idea that the world and the universe is illusory, and modern physics corroborates that with, you know, the quantum theory tremendously. But what A Course in Miracles adds to that, that complements that Eastern, you know, illusory mysticism, if you will, is the idea that it's purposive. And the reason it's purposive is that we want to deny truth as egos because we're invested in the ego, and we want to. It's a masochistic, insane purpose and intent, and so if we can look at our intention coming from the default position of the ego, to be a victim and to condemn in order to maintain the belief in separation, then we can see the insanity of it. See that, well, that's not working, and that gives us the motivation to let it go. So. I'll read the next paragraph here. The way we choose the true teacher is to look at the false teacher and say, I do not want to listen to you anymore. sounds familiar, right? That is what it means to be in one's right mind, and what the happy dream is. It is looking at the nightmare and happily saying, I do not have to listen to you anymore. What could make us happier than to look at all of our nightmares, all of our tales of abuse, guilt, pain, anxiety, and terror, all of our concerns, preoccupations, and obsessions, and say we do not have to listen to them anymore and mean it. That is how we rest in the Holy Spirit. We cannot rest in the Holy Spirit with our ego. Yet that is what everyone wants to do. That is the compromise game everyone plays with God, the Holy Spirit, Jesus, and unfortunately, with this Course. That's quite a bit there, doesn't it?
It does. It really, really does. Just this whole idea, first off, let us be clear here. And, you know, you tell me what your thoughts about this as well. The right mind is still the ego. The right mind is not the Holy Spirit mind, because you're still living in an illusion. You're still, even when you're thinking from the right mind, you're still seeing the world, and you're still seeing the things that we need to be looking at or thinking about. The right mind is still a part of the ego, but it's a part of the ego that we can train it. Actually, we can. I don't know if train is the right word, but it is true that the ego can become eventually helpful to us by being taught And it can be taught, even though in some places it says it can't be taught. But I think in the section Right Teaching and Right Learning, it does say, you know, that the ego can be brought around to be helpful and to help us to break away from itself. And, you know, using the thorn to pull out the other thorn is really kind of how it works. But it has to do with my choice of what I want to see. And it's almost like Jesus is giving us, you know, we're in a room like Clockwork Orange, where, you know, we're being shown, you know, all these things, and all these things are just appearing, and our eyes are being propped open so we can't stop looking. And then, you know, Jesus, you know, comes in and hands us a remote control and takes the things off our eyes and says, okay, now, you know, you can change a channel if you want to. And so many of us, even though we have the ability to change the channel, still want to stay and watch the drama. And this is the only reason, you know, it's not because, you know, the devil made me do it. It's the only reason that we remain watching the drama when we've been given this remote control, is because we purposely want to remain here. And really, you have to change your purpose. You have to make a determination. Yeah, I want to escape from this world that I'm seeing, and I have this remote control now. I can change the channel any moment. When something comes up, I can always change a channel. That is right-minded thinking. And, you know, while it's still in the realm of the ego, it is bringing us more into this happy, happy dream.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think I would probably use a little different language, but I think the, you know, the real self, if you will, is kind of a symbolic idea of the decision in our mind, our decision-making mind, to choose against the idea that we're a separate self, and that and we choose against the condemnation. So in a sense, it's basically the only, I like how the Course says, it's the only, it's, you know, the right mind is an illusion, only because anything that has to do with polarity is illusory. But just like it talks about forgiveness, it's the one aspect of the illusion that undoes the illusion. And so, you know, if we invest in, are we there, Lynn? Hello?
No, it looks like I'm losing you or something.
Am I back?
Let me see. I hear you, so obviously
okay.
You must be.
Okay.
That was weird. I got a little pop-up, and it was an illusion.
Yeah. Well, I just heard this wink. That like, the Skype call over sound, boink, boink sound. So I thought I better try connecting again. So fortunately, it had a join call button. So anyway, pardon that interruption. So are we back into the?
We're back. Yeah, everything's fine.
Okay, great. Okay, all right, good. Well, anyway, yeah, I think just to you know, finish the thought. I'm not sure how far I got until it cut off, but yeah, that, I like the idea that, you know, that we took with us into the dream. A thread that, you know, the ego's interpretation of it is a dark thread that leads us deeper into the cave, so to speak, of the idea of separation and separate interests and condemnation. And if we turn it around and realize that that isn't working for us, you know, that's the real alternative, that it's still an illusion, but it's the illusion of forgiveness, unlike the illusion of everything but forgiveness, is that it takes us out of the dream. Then it's the same thread, but, you know, when we hand over hand on that thread going the other direction, it becomes a golden thread, metaphorically, because it leads us out of the darkness of duality and the condemnation that symbolizes, that suggests that, you know, there's parts of the dream that are better or worse, or that you know, the innocence that we on some level all remember could possibly have been lost. And when we take metaphorically the hand of the Holy Spirit, you know, we are pulling on that golden thread and restoring our mind to the light that we never left, and discover everyone else, quote unquote, is waiting there for us.
Exactly. And looking at the false teacher and saying, I don't want to listen to you anymore. Mm-hmm. excuse me. That's extremely powerful. That's mm-hmm. extremely powerful. It's hard to even imagine, you know, if you haven't done it or if you don't do it, how powerful it is. But it is actually taking control of my own mind and my own thinking, and to be the one who's doing it. Okay, so this is the question, you know, that we always ask, you know, who is the one who does the course? Who's actually studying this Course in Miracles and doing, you know, this work? Well, it is this right-minded being who has always been here, is always here in your mind. It's the one who is always telling you you're going kind of the wrong direction, or you know, gently trying to you know, guide you to change your thinking. And actually, it actually is the thing that is telling me what is right when I'm making the decision to do something wrong, and therefore making myself feel guilty because I have this thing in me that already knows the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so every time I veer away from the truth in my thinking and in my life and in the way that I operate, this thing is telling me, you know, don't do that. You know, you're hurting yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's my willful decision to go against my own right mind that is what really brings about these daily feelings of guilt that keep me running back to the ego because I buy into the guilt, I get into the fear, I you know, go into some kind of shame or you know, something in my own mind. I mean, this is instantaneous. This is not something that goes over a long period of time. Oh, I'm feeling bad about this. No, this is instantly when
right.
when I choose wrongly. What is choosing wrongly? Oh, Lynn, did you decide to rob the bank? Is that choosing wrongly? No. I mean, it would be choosing wrongly. But no, choosing wrongly is any time that I choose to turn away from my brother who's asking for help, any time that I choose to judge another person thinking that they're good or bad or that they are whatever it is, any kind of judgment that I have about anything is choosing for that wrong mind, any kind of judgment about it at all. And mm-hmm. so that choosing for the wrong mind over and over, that's even when I know the truth. And really, when you think about it, you've always known what is right and what is wrong. You mm-hmm. you just don't follow it because you choose to do otherwise. And this is what he's talking about. When we stop choosing that, and we just say to it, "I'm not going to listen to you." When I look on Facebook and see my friend, you know, shouting to the high heavens that Donald Trump is the greatest thing that ever happened, you know, going into that spiral of judgment and fear and upset that, you know, the ego would lead me into if I was thinking about that in that way, that is my choice. I decide that I want to be mad at my friend and upset with Donald Trump and all those things. I'm deciding these things all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so the power of decision, go ahead.
I was going to say, and you could replace that particular political figure with any seemingly separate self, any person that we make a big deal out of in our lives, including the image that we see in the mirror. When we make big deals out of those specifics, we're basically saying, I want to deny the truth. I want to deny the inseparable and completely inclusive and interconnected sameness that we all share, that is the gateway to the oneness that we really are, that we can't really comprehend at that level, but you know, from where we think we are. But I think we're all drawn to you know, that undoing. And that's why, we're all participating in this forum, no doubt, because we were drawn to a quality that's behind the words, the content behind the forum that speaks to us of the reality that couldn't possibly change. And the identity that does change is what we've discovered doesn't work for us. So
exactly. Yeah. And drawing to that quality, see, that's what we're really doing. This is why people get this so upside down, mm-hmm. because they're looking at it as, you know, this is a discipline and this is a work and this is the thing that I have to do. And they're not seeing that actually it's an affirmation of my truth. It's, mm-hmm. it's the thing that just makes the shining being of what I am shine even more brightly. It is the thing that brings me to a place of just utter joy, on a regular basis, because I recognize and realize that I am not that little demanding, angry, jealous thing that the ego would have me believe that I am. When I see that, I'm like, you know, oh my gosh, you poor thing. I'm saying this to myself. Oh, you poor thing. How could you have believed this all this time? How could you have been in this deep sorrow and pain all these years suffering because you were believing this silly crap about yourself? And that's when I recognize, oh, I'm the, you know, there's a lot of things, New Agers, you know, the inner child, the, you know, inner mother, I don't know what the hell, whatever these things are, that's really what it is. It's this self that is so innocent and free and beautiful, that it can't even comprehend the life I'm living.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can't even comprehend the things that are going on in my mind. That's the truth of who I am. And so that's what's calling. It's not, you know, you got to be good and, you know, destroy the ego and forget about the world. It's this thing that is just, that is the truth of what I am. And you know it too. You know it. Everyone knows what they are. And that's what's calling us to get out of this mud pile here and move into the truth and to be joyful and happy. And that's what he's talking about here. This is the real world. So, anyway, do you have anything to say? And I'll go on to the next.
There's always things to come. Maybe that we should jump into the next paragraph. Do you want to read that?
Okay. Let's go ahead and do that. And I'll read that. Let me just really quickly put a note on the board. So we have a new person here who's posting a lot of stuff, and I don't think they know what we're doing here.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, while you're doing that, I will make one quick comment,
okay,
and that it's
okay.
Kind of tied into what you were saying a few minutes ago. What flashed, something you said triggered a memory of that very Star Wars movie when the protagonists are on the Death Star, or I think that's where they were. And Darth Vader are having a lightsaber battle, and at one point Obi-Wan shuts his lightsaber off and says something. I'm probably going to paraphrase this, you know, but you know, if you strike me down now, I'll become more powerful than you can possibly imagine. And I was thinking that, you know, that I would probably reword that slightly, is that, you know, if we recognize that what the ego tries to do is to always do battle. There's a part of us that recognizes that that's never going to work. And if it doesn't mean on the level of form, we stop doing what we think is an appropriate action to express the kindness in our life and to our caring for all things and all beings. But when we inwardly have chosen against the ego, it doesn't mean that, we don't recognize the sensory data. It just means that we've chosen a thought system that leads us back to the awareness that is more powerful than we could possibly imagine, and more wonderful and more joyous and more innocent and more complete. And that's what's drawing us back to the force, if you will, that is that transcends the limited and by definition, you know, incomplete world of separate interests. So anyway,
absolutely. And when you saw that scene, this is the thing: we watch these movies, we see these things, and inside of us, when we see these things, it upwells in us. When he said that, "You strike me down, and I will become even far more powerful," that something struck in me. That upwelled in me when I heard it, and I knew that it was true. I knew that it was true, and not, you know, anything about Star Wars. I knew it was true about me. Mm-hmm. That it was like the ego, kind of, you know, get rid of this thing. You know, strike this thing down, and what will be left is far more powerful than you will ever imagine. And it's true. It's true.
and the way we leave the battleground, metaphorically, is not by staying on that level, but by rising above it, as the Course suggests, above the battleground, which is really saying choosing against the idea of battle, the idea of conflict, the idea of polarization and duality, and saying, I'm not gonna swing at that tar baby anymore. I'm getting out of that game. You know, I'm hitting the game over button, and I'm just gonna walk away from the arcade altogether and say, it's not working for me anymore. I just refuse, not in any kind of combative way, but I refuse to participate in the denial of truth. And that's the denial of the denial.
Exactly. Exactly. And yeah, it's not combatively. It's like if someone came up to you today, Bruce, and said, "Oh, Bruce, you know," like if I came up to you today and I said, "Bruce, look at this thing Santa Claus brought me last Christmas. Look, Sandy brought me this." And you're like, "Who?" Because you don't have a belief in Santa Claus, so it doesn't even make sense to you that would be possible. This is what happens when you shift in this thinking. All the things that you used to think were possible or part of your life and the world, you actually see is not even real. And so none of the things that people say about how things got here or what's going on or anything anymore has any kind of meaning to you, because you can see the actual truth of what's happening. It's pretty mind-blowing. So I'm going to go on to the next paragraph and see if we can get through this in our hour today. Okay. It makes no sense, and it is totally meaningless to talk about a happy dream unless we first talk about what it is intended to correct. It is intended to correct the ego's dreams of terror, cruelty, pain, suffering, guilt, and death, which means we first must get in touch with our ego's dreams. How do we do that? We pay attention to our world's dreams, to what our body is dreaming, not at night necessarily, but what we are dreaming now, every day, every minute, all of our specialness thoughts. This is how we do it, is that we look at these thoughts. Mm-hmm. Asking Jesus for help in that context means asking him to help us look at them in a different way. And the way he helps us look is by reminding us that they are projections of what is in the mind. As he tells us in chapter 21, they are the outside picture of an inward condition. And so here is the key that unlocks all of this. And this is why forgiveness is the thing that really works to just stop it. Boom. It just stops it in its tracks. It can't go any further because,
the new heart prescription, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. The new heart prescription. Just stop it. You just recognize that, this is a projection of my own thinking in my own mind. And therefore, now I can look at this and say, you know, here a guy came in the room and started writing a bunch of stuff that I thought was silly, and I decided, nope, I got to stop that. That's my own mind going through all these little silly things and recognizing, oh, that's that, I got to stop that. You know, going to, you know, check my bank account and realizing there's been some kind of mistake, more than likely on my part, because the bank does make mistakes, but not as often as I do. And going into like fear and oh my God, what am I going to do? And how is this going to happen? And what's going to go on now? Because I got to pay my rent and all that. Right when you see that, that's when you look at, this is a outward projection of an inward condition.
Right.
This is a projection of homelessness, lack, fear, shame, guilt, all these things that are going on in the mind when you're thinking about this situation. These are all projections of my inner condition. Now, what do you do with that? Okay, I'm seeing it. It's terrible. I know I'm making it all up, and not that I'm making it all up, that it's reflecting a thought that I already have. It's reflecting the way I feel about myself. It's reflecting the way I feel about God, what I think about my support, what I think about my source. What all of these things are going on. And this is when you do the all important thing of asking Jesus or the Holy Spirit or your inner teacher or your inner kindness teacher or Buddha or Casper the Friendly Ghost or whomever you have deemed as being your connection, you call upon that to look at that with you.
Mm-hmm.
Holy Spirit, look at this with me. And when you call upon that to look at it with you, and you see that, you know, all these thoughts that you're having are thoughts about a future that doesn't even exist. You know, you can, whatever it is that comes to you from this interaction with this inner teacher that brings you to a knowledge or a just a knowing that everything is fine and perfect. Nothing is going to happen to me. I am safe. Not because I'm saying I'm safe. I'm trying to convince myself. Because I see the truth, and the only way I'm going to see the truth is by sharing the contents of my mind with the Holy Spirit and letting him correct them for me. And he will correct them, and very gently and very lovingly. And once those things start being corrected, then the correction goes on and on and on with other, you generalize it out into your life. And this is the process, actually, that we call forgiveness. Jesus calls it forgiveness.
Exactly.
It's looking at this and recognizing that it could not be, it never happened, but knowing it because you know it, because you know that it never happened, not because you want to, you know, it never happened, it's not real, it's not true. No, that's not the way it works. You have to really look at your belief that it is happening and recognizing that it couldn't possibly be true.
Yeah, it's really, again, looking at the purpose of nature of wanting things to change. If we actually are invested in an identity that has, a stake in the outcome, then, you know, it's not going to be particularly sincere, because, you know, when we say, this is an illusion. Well, you know, if our identity is still wrapped up in that, and that's okay if we recognize that. And I think that's where, you know, again, one of the brilliant contributions that Ken and the folks of the FACIM make here is that it's not about trying to brute force our way through it. It's, you know, don't fight yourself, but just look. All we have to do is look with that counsel, with that inner kindness teacher, which ultimately is us. But we're not at a place typically where we're ready to, you know, embrace that idea. So we need the training wheels approach, you know, because as you know, Ken reminds us that, you know, Jesus doesn't call us adults anywhere in the course. He refers to us multiple places as infants and children, you know, children at best, but typically infants, you know. And since you brought up the, you know, the infants earlier in our conversation today. But that infancy, really is a place of tremendous potential, because if we can get our own ideas out of the way and see where we're invested in, you know, an identity that isn't working for us, then we stand a chance of allowing that correction that really is what we really are, you know, or a representative symbolically of that, to help us out of the dream. That's the golden thread. Shall I read the last, the fourth paragraph there? Okay. That is what Jesus, that is what asking Jesus for help in our relationships is about. It is not asking that he fix our relationships, not that he tell us what to say or do, or where to go to get a job, or what lottery number to choose, or what stock to invest in. He does not know about any of these things. As I always like to tell people, Jesus cannot count past one. So don't ask him to tell you how much money you should make, where you should go, what lottery number you should pick, or what horse you should bet on, unless it is number one. In parentheses, joking, of course. He does not know about specificity. He knows only about the oneness of God's Son, and so the oneness that his love represents automatically knits together all the fragments and makes them one. Yeah, and obviously, unlike Humpty Dumpty, you know, that Humpty Dumpty never fell in you know, this thought system. Because there's just one. There's no little bits of eggshell to pick up.
There's no place to fall. There's
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Fall to where in non-duality, right? Yeah. Bingo. And what does that mean? It means realizing everyone here is the same. The abusers and the abused, the oppressors and the oppressed, the good guys and the bad guys. They all have the same split mind. They all have the same ego, the same right mind, the Holy Spirit, and the same decision maker. That little toggle switch that chooses between the thought systems of inclusion and exclusion. Everyone, without exception, that is the key. Learning that is the happy dream. But we first look at our ego's need and our investment in seeing separation and in seeing special and separate interests. And that's an incredible investment. And we made up a whole universe to reinforce that investment. So it's not like we need to beat ourselves up if we find ourselves lapsing back into that moment to moment. But we can, with practice and diligence and gentle vigilance, look at the contents of our mind and not condemn ourselves for having chosen that thought system. And because the real alternative is against condemnation, which means that if we find ourselves condemning a group or an interpreter of reality or whatever as being wrong, then we're obviously back on the battleground, and we've picked up the sword again, and we're back at it in the battle. So that's where it's so important to not condemn ourselves when we catch ourselves back in the land of judgment and just say, oh, whoops, there we go again. Okay, but that's not going to work for me. And then gently drop the sword and then taking the hand of our metaphoric inner kindness teacher and allowing ourselves to be lifted up above the battleground of separate interests again.
Exactly. So, excuse me, I'm just doing the little Britney Spears whoops, I did it again thing. What I notice for myself, again, this is just for me, is that when I see myself doing these very, very things, and I tell myself to stop it, I don't want to stop it. That's the craziest thing in the world. But yeah, there's a lot of times that I don't want to stop it. You know, if I'm like, I notice this a lot on Facebook, where, you know, somebody will say something and, you know, I'll object to it, you know, the little, I know all about this mind. And so I'll object to it and write something, and then they'll write something, and then I'll write something. And then, like, all of a sudden I'm like, I'm saying to myself, this is not what you should be doing at this very moment, is arguing with someone on Facebook over, you know, whatever it is. And I still say, oh, but this, you know what? I have such a clever response. I gotta say what I want to say here. You know, I'm arguing with myself. I'll type things out and then I'll just, eventually just delete them. Because, you know, I go through this whole little argument with myself about how much I still want to play this game. And how much, wouldn't it be, it'd be okay if I just, you know, said, you know, Sarah Palin's a dumbass one more time, wouldn't it? You know, it'd be okay if I, you know, I mean, seriously, I bargain with myself about how much of this do I really want. And when I look at it, again, you know, I must have like 12 different minds looking at all this stuff. When I look at it again. From another direction, I just see how insane it is, and yet, you know, there's sometimes I'll still push send, you know, sometimes I'll still push send even when I go through all that with myself. So, you know, this is not easy, you know. If it was easy, everybody would be doing it and it would be over now. But it's not easy because
it's phenomenally simple, but not easy, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. And I think in response to what you're just saying, to me, an important question comes up whenever I look at what I'm doing or about to do or what I think I've done. I think the important question resolves into some aspect of, you know, some way of rephrasing this question was, would I condemn myself of this? Would I want to punish myself for what I'm accusing someone else of saying or doing or being or whatever? And if the answer is no, then that it doesn't necessarily mean our behavior is going to change, but ultimately I think it does. But the most important thing is if we choose a different thought system, the one that realizes that condemnation in any form, not, and it's the condemnation that makes separation real, it's not effective. It's not, like, I love how Ken Wapnick says, it's not sinful, evil, or wicked, it's just silly. But we don't see that from the battleground. We think that there's rampant stupidity, and we forget that that's a projection of our mind. and you know, the old, it takes one to know one kind of thing. It's like, oh, whoops, that's my projection, isn't it? If I'm making wrong or condemning, then that must mean there's some part of my forgiveness classroom that a major part of the curriculum that you know, or minor, depending on how invested I am in battling it, that I haven't learned yet, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just why delay the peace that awaits us that comes from relinquishing the sword and dropping it and allowing ourselves to be lifted up to that awareness that sees that none of this really had any effect on the perfect oneness that we never left. It, on the level of form, sure, it has lots of effects. I mean, within the dream, dream characters make big changes in dreams, and we're all in that script. But above the dream, not so much.
yeah. So Bruce, would you like to just this next paragraph? I think would be really helpful, and maybe we could just read this through. I know we're past our time, but I think that this would tie this up for us really well.
Sure, go for it.
Okay. So do you want to read it or you want me to read it?
I'll go for it, yeah.
Okay, all right. So that is what asking Jesus for help in our relationships is about. It is not a asking that he fix our... Oh, you just read this.
I did.
You just read this one.
That's okay.
Okay, I don't know why I was thinking that it hadn't been read, because I just remember reading all this and thinking, oh, I should check my lottery ticket.
Well, they always bear repeating, you know. I think the idea that repetition is a good thing is a helpful one, because, you know, every time we forgive ourselves for choosing a dysfunctional thought system, we're basically letting ourselves and everyone else in the whole cosmos off the hook in that moment. And that needs a lot of repetition, because we've made a tremendous amount of diversity and variety as part of the dream. And so in order for us to, you know, mature beyond the infancy stage and to wake up from the dream, pick your metaphor, we need a lot of practice. I mean, it's not, because you know, it would freak us out if suddenly we were hurled into an awareness of perfect oneness and nothing else. You know, that we would, you know, it would have an adverse effect if we were to suddenly have that experience. So we just, you know, most of us, probably with very few exceptions, need a gradual awakening. And so that's why I think, you know, metaphorically, you know, that we start to see the twilight an hour or two before the dawn. And since you've been calling our conversation the House of the Rising Sun, you know, if the sun were to just flash into our eyes, you know, from at 2 or 3 in the morning, you know, and full noon brightness, you know, we'd probably run screaming in panic because we wouldn't know how to deal with it. But if we get little bits of, you know, this slow awakening, you know, sunrise, and eventually the sun will pop above the horizon, but we get a lot of advance notice. We get a lot of opportunities to continue to forgive and to gradually undo our condemnations of the dream. Absolutely. And that's that undoing that condemnation of the dream is what helps us wake up.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. So I guess that's about it then. So do you have any announcements you'd like to make, Bruce?
Well, sure. There's still a few more weeks before the Weekend of Freedom Retreat, which is happening in Estes Park, Colorado. And you can go to weekendoffreedomretreat.org or .com. Either one works. And I'm going to be one of the presenters there, along with Gary Renard and Cindy Laura Renard and David Hoffmeister and Maria Felipe and Doug Fishman and Craig Villarubia and Lori Coburn and did I miss anybody? Well, anyway, it's going to be a lot of fun. I think it's going to be a blast. And I think there's already about 100 people. Last I talked with Cheryl and Barrett, who are the organizers. They said that's, you know, the enrollment is continuing to grow. I think last, the 16th was the last day to reserve a room, but there might still be some left. You could check to see if the Estes Park YMCA, where it's being held, still has rooms available.
I'm sure they have plenty of rooms, but okay, just maybe not at the same, place, the same building. So.
Oh, okay.
They have a lot of other accommodations there.
Oh, okay. So there may be still some at that facility. Okay. Well, I don't know what they have or don't have, of course, but even if you weren't able to get a room there, you could stay in Estes Park or in the area, you know, nearby and attend. But I think it's going to be a blast. And what else? Anyway, just as we started out the hour talking about is the two websites that have such tremendous resources, such tremendous resources as we've been reading from this last hour, FACIM.org and ACIM.org, the two sister organizations. And so we're very fortunate to have those tremendous resources. And I'm always reachable through ACIMblog.com and on Facebook. So thank you, Lynn, as always, for a wonderful conversation, and look forward to doing this again next week.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bruce. And you have a great week. And enjoy the weather out there. We're finally going to get some sun here. It was sunny yesterday, so it's been pretty cloudy and rainy here for a while. So it's kind of cool to have sun. Anyway, you have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Saturday. Bye bye.
Thanks. Thank